This is an ABC podcast.
This is Neat and Footy on ABC Radio Australia.
Hello, kita to our Papua New Guinea listeners, and stay tuned because we have a special Papua New Guinean guest with us today. And welcome everyone to Neat and Footy, the best spot for Pacifica news and stories in the rugby league and rugby union worlds. My name is Tinirau Aruna, and alongside me is the number one impact player in the world, Will Hopowate. Will, welcome back to Neat and Footy Mondays.
Hello, Lale. Thanks for having me, T. It's good to be an impact player. Never had that experience as a player, so good to experience it here on Neat and Footy Radio.
Off the back fence. Off the back fence.
No, thank you.
Hey, mate, speaking of our co-host, Sammy, I've seen some of his footages of him in Papua New Guinea.
I have too.
And he's watching some local footy. Mate, some of those kids diving on that gravel.
Mate. That's proper back fence material over there. They are legends over there in Papua New Guinea. We love you guys over there. Sammy, hope you're enjoying your time over there.
Yeah, I hope you're enjoying your holiday, working holiday. He's usually due one every month, every few weeks. So yeah. He should be joining us next week here on Knees and Footy Monday. But what do we got in store for our listeners today?
There's 2 weeks left of the regular season in the NRL. So every game has huge impacts, especially for the bottom half of the top eight. Pacific Nations Cup is kicked off with Galetahi beating Manu Samoa.
You got me a beauty there. Mate, you wanted to start. Manu Samoa needed to start.
I tricked you there, T. But, since I've been on here with Sammy, his union expertise and knowledge has been rubbing off on me, and I'm actually been watching a bit more rugby as of late.
Oh, you got us covered for today because I didn't watch any rugby union.
I wouldn't say covered. I'd say a little bit I'd love to share, but we'll do our best, exactly. And so, as you said, hello, Oketa, at the top of the show, you mentioned a special guest coming on. You actually might have played with him, T, associated with him.
So our special guest is Paul Aiton. I call him Papua New Guinea royalty because there's this image in my mind. I remember seeing this image in the paper, and it was of him being lifted and paraded through Papua New Guinea. But the reasons why we know each other is because I was a Panthers junior when he was playing at the Penrith Panthers in the first team. So cool to get him on our show because he is the current Papua New Guinea Hunters head coach. Mm-hmm. He's also played for a few NRL and Super League clubs. And being one of them, one of the greatest clubs in the world, Wakefield Trinity.
Did you play together there or you just missed each other?
No. So when I was – he left – not long before I was going there, but he gave me the big
the rundown
on the club, more so off field, outside of the club, and what it's like over there. But a great man, and very honoured to have him here on Knees and Footy Monday, being a busy head coach for the PNG Hunters.
I've got a question for you, T. You said Paul was lifted up like royalty back in PNG. Did you get the same treatment when you went back to the Cook Islands?
To the Cook Islands.
Or were you holding the chair?
I was holding the chairs. That's correct. Hey, we forgot to mention as well, we've also got our good friend Shelley Long joining us to cover all things NRLW and cover the Women's Rugby World space. And hopefully we'll see if she can cover some of our rugby union stuff as well.
Moment of the week.
So the moment of the week. Now, if you're a rugby league fan and you've been following rugby league for the last 20 plus years, you would have remembered the 2005 grand final where the West Tigers played the North Queensland Cowboys and then the famous Benji Marshall flick pass. Mm-hmm. So on the weekend, round 25 in the NRL, we had the Tigers take on the Cowboys at Leichhardt Oval. It was packed. There were plenty of Tigers fans there. They even wore the 2005 jersey, that style, the Tigers team did, and they looked pretty sick. But it was also Jerome Luai's 150th match, but there was a huge moment during this game where I think it will go down as one of the best tries of this year.
It was a 100-meter try, a team try, and obviously, as you mentioned, a throwback to 2005, a flick pass.
Short ball, Nane. Now Drinkwater. Numbers Purdue. Doesn't pass to the winger. Jackson Purdue takes a tackle. 9 away from the line. Robson scoots out a double. Loses the ball. Picked up by Samuel Afainu over the 10. He's got Luai in support. They can spin it left here. Taylan May looking to isolate Malamai. Flick pass back on the inside. Talk about celebrating 2005. The flick pass, Benji style to Taruma. And gets it away to Jaree Buller. Scores under the post. Oh, that is 20 years in the making. Of all the days to do it.
Oh, man, what a moment.
Yeah, but how fitting was it for that jersey, that flick pass, that try? And a shout out to Jerome Luai, as you mentioned, 150. I've seen some of his mates from Penrith, came, Spencer Lenu, Stephen Crichton. They came, took a photo with him after. They were obviously at the game. And so shout out on that great milestone.
Kia ora, I'm Ashley Masters and you're listening to Nisian Footy.
All right. Well, with some rugby league results and news, we're double rugby league today, T. So let's do a game each. Which one do you want to point out?
I'm going to cover the one I mentioned on Friday, the Panthers versus Raiders. This was played in Mudgee, New South Wales, country New South Wales. Halftime score was 10-6. You know, Panthers got out to that early lead, two tries to their centre, Casey McLean. But I just want to talk about the ending. Now, I know we just listened to the West Tigers try of the year. Now, I wasn't so confident because the way that this game ended, I believe this one will be their try of the year. But let's go through the final 5 minutes of this game. So the Panthers are ahead 16-12.
Mm-hmm.
The Raiders are attacking their try line. They end up scoring a try with 5 minutes to go through their 5'8", Ethan Strange.
How good is he?
Jamal Fogarty, he has the kick to take them out to a two-point lead. Now, this is in that grey area, so it's between the post and the sideline. You know that that area where most kickers don't do that much practice. They're just practicing from the sideline or in front. So when they come to these spots, you think, oh, yeah, he should slot this one over. He ends up missing it. So the score is 16-all. And then both teams get field goal opportunities to try and win the game. Unfortunately, they both miss. They go into golden point near overtime. Now, there's 2 minutes left in that first half of overtime.
As it comes now to Yo. Yo charging onto that one. That's a good run. He's 29 metres out, right in front of the post. As it comes now from Kenny. Back it goes to Smith again. Smith
is caught.
Last tackle coming up here. Back it comes now. Long pass to Cleary. 35 metres out. Has a shot at field goal. It bounces off the upright. Into the field of play. Raiders have got possession through Stewart, who sprints downfield. Left-hand side. He's got Strange in support. Strange comes towards the fullback. He gets through that. He sprints away. He's over the halfway. Over the 30. And coming across. He managed to get his arms free. Pass on the inside. Weeks is away. Try Raiders. Try Raiders. Well. Point extra time, rugby league. Don't you love it?
Oh, wow. Unbelievable.
What stands out to you when you listen to that audio and that try being scored from the Raiders?
Well, honestly, that, I think it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable to watch it. And you mentioned Strange scored 5 minutes before full time. And again, he's there setting up this great try. And I think, you know, him and Weeks, they're going to be the future of Canberra for a long time.
Yeah, I mentioned on Friday the youth of the Raiders team, and that just, you know, they displayed that. But the thing, when I was watching that live, when Nathan Cleary went for that kick, so it's a Panthers home game.
Yep.
Did you hear that Panther prowl noise that they put on? Yeah. So the ball's in the air, and then they play the Panther prowl, thinking that he's slotted it, and it ends up hitting the post. Jed Stewart, so Ricky Stewart's son, he plays on the wing. He ends up regathering the ball. Now, something must have happened because he went straight through two Panthers defenders, and it might have been Liam Martin that pulled his hands away, so the ref might have caught him offside, and that's where he made that initial break.
Do you know what I think it was, T? I think because he was in the air, They thought they couldn't tackle him, but correct me if I'm wrong. If it bounces and goes in the air, you can be tackled in the air.
You can tackle him in the air if it's not dangerous. Like, that's right. Tip him on his head.
But I think they were thinking the other way, as in
let him go.
Let him go. Yeah. That's what it looked like to me, anyway. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I thought either that or he's been caught offside and he didn't want to give the penalty to the Raiders. Because you think where Nathan Cleary kicked the ball.
It was quite deep.
He was deep and then they were in front of him. So even then, just give the penalty away. But, man, that Raiders team, very exciting to watch. I think they sent a good message to the rest of the competition saying, you know, they can compete with those top teams. They've got a lot of spark, a lot of fire in that team. And I also wouldn't... I wouldn't call it a day for the Panthers.
No way.
Like, those two games in a row, they've gone golden point against the Raiders and Melbourne Storm. And to say after, what was it, seven rounds they were last place, and now they find themselves in the finals. Yeah, don't count them out yet because they're here to compete. But that's my game. Who did you cover this week?
So I actually went down. I'm going to cover the Manly versus Dolphins game. I actually went down to the game on Saturday afternoon. It was a beautiful afternoon down at Brookie Oval. So I went down to the game. Both teams had plenty to play for, as you know, T. They're both playing for a top eight spot. Them, Dolphins, Manly and the Roosters sort of fighting for that last.
Cover that shortly.
Cover that shortly. Sort of fighting for that last spot. In the top eight. It was also Cherry Evans' 350th game.
What a legend. All for the same club as well.
All for the same club. And so, man, he hasn't taken a backward step, old Chez. And so shout out to Chez for such a great milestone. But, I thought Manly, they dominated the game overall and they kept their slim finals chance hopes alive. And overall, there was actually a number of Nijin players that scored that crossed the white line. For the Dolphins, we had Kulikefu Finifuyaki, Connolly Lemuelu, and Felice Kaufusi. Jermaine Isako also kicked 5 from 5, so plenty of Nijin power there. And then for Manly, we had Lehi Hopuate as well as Tolu Taukola, who scored for Manly. So well done to those Nijin players and crossing the white line.
Now you look at this scoreline, 58-30. Yeah. Was there any defence on that day or was it
touch?
Touch 40.
Touch 40, no. So I think Manly really troubled Dolphins with their attacking shape, especially when they shifted to either edge and Turbo at the back. He was just causing havoc for the opposing
defensive
centers. I think he scored a double. He scored a double. Brooks scored a double. Lehi scored a double.
What was your favorite try out of the 58 points they scored?
I don't want to say it because I'm trying to stay the best Hopuati in the family, but it was a Lehi's try.
Lehi's try. And you don't even... Oh, so we could, actually, let's go to Lehi's try right now.
Dummy half is Nivale. To the left-hand side to Brooks. Tom Dvojevic as well to Lehi Hopuati. Shows sheer pace. Bounced off the defence and plants the footy as well. And the Seagulls go ahead for the first time in the game.
I think that was more of a shout out to your brother, eh? Because I thought Tolu Kola's try was pretty good as well.
I actually did too, but I got told to do the Lehi's on.
Was so, Tolu Kola's one the kick one off the scrum?
Off the scrum, yeah. So they kicked it, and
that's a 70-meter kick. Daly Cherry Evans from the scrum, 30 meters out, kicks it 70 meters, and Tolu Kola, and also your brother was right behind him as well.
How good is Tolu? Honestly, just the way he's been playing all this whole year, especially the last few weeks, his ability to break tackles, create something out of nothing, he definitely gives that X factor to Manly. And his ability, he could be a future Origin player if he keeps this up.
Well, he's going to have to play a big role. Now, I want to cover for these next two games because I want to cover the NRL ladder. There's two more games left, round 26, round 27.
Yep.
Now, the top seven are locked in, so they can't leave the top eight. So you've got Raiders, Storm, Bulldogs, Warriors, Broncos, Sharks, Panthers. Now, there's a race for their eighth position between three teams, the Roosters, the Dolphins, and the Sea Eagles. So the Roosters start with a two-point head start, so one win head start. They're sitting eighth on 28 points. The Dolphins are ninth on 26 points, and the Sea Eagles are 10th on 26 points. Points difference is the reason why Manly are 10th. So these next two games for all three of these teams are crucial. So Roosters, they have Storm and Rabbitohs. You'd say if they played like they did against the Eels, they most likely will lose to the Storm. The Dolphins, they play the Titans and the Raiders. Raiders just on fire at the moment. And the Sea Eagles having Dragons and the Warriors for the last two, all playing for their eighth position. Now, when you look at those three teams and the teams that they've played for, playing against, who are you tipping to get that eighth spot?
That's a tough one. If I'm going off form over the past few weeks, I will say the Roosters. They've got a hard one this week, obviously Melbourne. But I just think if they, I feel like they will be able to sneak in. What about you, T?
Oh, man, the way Rabbitohs played on the weekend, Dragons. They beat the Dragons, and that was a 40-0.
40-0.
40-0. It would be pretty. I want the Roosters. Obviously, I want the Roosters to make the top eight. That's done. But how cool would it be to see the Sea Eagles go and win the Dragons and the Warriors and then creep into that top eight?
And both very doable too.
Yeah.
Like they can definitely win both.
And remember, you can hear every NRL game, including the finals, live on ABC Radio Australia.
All right, and over to Queensland Cup. We have the PNG Hunters. Unfortunately, they lost to the winner Manly Seagulls 32-10, which leaves them in eighth spot with one round to go. This week is a must-win. They travel to Cairns to play the Northern Pride, who are 13th, and a reminder we'll chat to their coach, Paul Aiton, later in the show. Over to New South Wales in the Jersey Flag competition, the Cavite Silktails put up a good fight in Nandi against the Sharks, but unfortunately just went down 22-16. Their last game of the year is this Saturday in Lautoka against the Bunnies, who are one spot above them on the ladder. A chance to get a fifth win of the year. Hopefully they get it done.
Nice work, Walt. Time for us to say a quick prayer and do our best in rugby union. But I want to start with the Manu Samoa versus the Ikalitahi. Last week we spoke to Nems and he gave the Ikalitahi a massive rap and said that he believed that they would win. And the Ikalitahi get up 30-16. What were your thoughts on this match?
Yeah, well, I actually watched part of this game. Obviously, you know, wanted to watch and support Tonga, but both teams, did we able to see some footage of the Sipitau and Sivatau?
I did on social media. They went at the same time,
man, eh? How good was it?
Yeah,
definitely. You don't want to be running around against either packs, but that was great to start off the game. And it was a very physical match. I mean, I'm not going to talk too technical here with rugby, but it was a very physical match. And I thought Tonga, it was led by their captain, Ben Tameifuna. He actually come up with a funny try assist. It was a try scored by Tongan flanker Siwa Moala. He actually, they were in the ruck, obviously, and Ben looked like a man playing against kids, picked him up and pretty much dragged him to the try line.
Carried him to their try line.
How strong is he? Have you seen him in real life, Ben?
Ben
Tameifuna.
I haven't seen him.
Okay, then I've never seen him, but this on TV, he looks humongous.
Mate, they all look humongous. And speaking of that start, the opening, so Manu Samoa, they start their Sipitau. Is it Sipitau?
Sivatau.
And then just as they're about to get heated up, all of a sudden you hear the Ikalitahi start going off and they're like, oh yeah, we're going to own this moment. And the cameras, the thing there, you don't know which one, the camera probably doesn't know which one to go at. Just sticking.
They had no mega pan out to show both.
But speaking of the Ikalitahi tries, who scored for the great Tongan team?
And so there were, Nems mentioned it last week. He said the key to Tonga winning was their fly half.
Patrick Pellegrini.
And so that Tonga only scored three tries to Samoa's two. And the difference was his boot, right? He's kicked 3 out of 3 from their tries and had 3 penalty goals. The try scorers for Tonga were Siosiwa Moala, Sonatane Takulua, and Sam Molly. And for Samoa was Tuni Tuitama and Milani Nanai. They were actually quite skillful tries, the Samoan tries. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but a lot of skill that was involved. And shout out to those boys that did cross the white line.
What we will do is get a more detailed review of the game when we speak to Nemani on Friday. So great work there. Let's shift over to the Wallabies versus South Africa, where Wallabies were looking to go 2 in a row on South African land, but unfortunately they fall short, losing this game 30-22. I did watch some of the highlights in this one and it looked very, very close. Samoan Brandon Peinga Amosa, he scored in the 67th minute to get the Wallabies within 1 point, but a late South Africa try got them the win. When you were here speaking to Sammy and the way that there's been this journey, right, whenever he talks about the Wallabies and rugby union. Now, this time last year, the language around this Wallabies squad and rugby union in general, it was always negative. And it was always like about to cry because rugby league was doing so well. But it's cool to see the Wallabies off the back of the British and Irish Lions tour and how they've earned some respect back in that jersey. And the way they've earned respect was through pure aggression and going out and playing with pride and putting some respect back in that jersey off the back of some of our Nijin players. So I will give a big shout out to the Wallabies. And in other news, Argentina, they beat the All Blacks 29-23.
What an upset.
A huge result. This means that every team has won one game and also lost one game. And we'll chat with Shelley Long shortly to cover the Women's World Cup.
Sounds good, T. Thanks for that. That's it for Rugby Union for now. We'll get to Shelley Long on the NRLW and more.
Hey guys, Patrick Pellegrini, Sammy's favourite cousin from Galitahi. You're listening to Nijin Footy.
The long story short with Shelley Long.
We welcome back our good friend Shelley Long, our PNG Orchids and NRLW superstar. Shelley, welcome back to Nijin Footy Mondays. How you been?
I've been good. How are you, T? I feel like we have not seen you in a while.
Yeah, it's been a bit busy with club visits and, yeah, it's been good. How's everything going with the knee? Are you looking for a PNG Orchids comeback Pacific Champs this year?
Oh, I'm really hoping for it. It is marked in my calendar. I have testing again this week, so I'm really hoping that I can get past on, if not all of it, but most of the stuff that I have remaining to pass. So I'm almost there, T, almost there.
All good. All the hard work is paying off. Great work. Let's rip straight into it. NRLW round 8. What stood out for you?
Yeah, NRLW round 8. This was an interesting one with only a few rounds left before finals kick off. The Bulldogs versus the Raiders game for me really stood out. The Canberra Raiders the week before went away over to New Zealand and just got the win against the New Zealand Warriors. The New Zealand Warriors at the time had 11 on the field, and so it was a bit of an interesting one. However, on the weekend, they absolutely thrashed the Bulldogs 56-24. It ended up being the highest scoring game ever in the NRLW competition as well. So in a combination of 56-24, that now beats any other team's overall tally.
Yeah, right. Okay. And man, I feel like the Bulldogs have just declined rapidly after their first two wins of the season, unfortunately. I know my sister Bunny came home pretty grumpy on the weekend. but yeah, as you said, the Raiders come away with a big win. Well done to them. And what was the other game you wanted to cover?
And the other game that I really wanted to cover was almost top of the table clash, but it was the Broncos versus Newcastle Knights. Now, this one was a really interesting one. A lot of people would have been sitting on the fence with who was going to win, but the Broncos won 46-16. At halftime, it was a very close game, and not to mention as well that the Knights came out really strong in that first part of the game. They scored 3 tries within, I think it was roughly 20 minutes, but the Broncos really came back in that second half of the game.
Now, looking at both those two games, high-scoring games, give us some try scorers and moments that stood out for you.
Yeah, for me, Shalom Salsa, she's one that absolutely loves the try line, up nice and close. Bar Jovers, she's been great in that attack for them. But Mele Hufanga, another one who loves the try lines as well. You know, she's always great for scoring tries. But over in the Bulldogs game, it was Alexis who really stood out for me for the Bulldogs. She managed to score a double in that game. And considering the Raiders were foot on the throat for the majority of it, to score 2 tries of your own, that's incredible.
Yeah, and I am going to give you this space to give a big rap to the Cowboys. We won't, you know, let that one slide by. What are your thoughts on how they've been going so far?
I think they're going great. A stat actually came out about them being the best defenders in the competition, and I think they haven't let many tries in. I think something that they will need to work on, especially as they're about to come up against the Roosters and the Broncos, will be their attack, being able to score points against some really strong teams. The Roosters, their forward pack is incredible, and also on their edges. So, you know, that will be a challenge defensively, but I think they'll be able to meet them. It'll be the attack that where I think they just need to improve a little bit more.
Yeah, speaking of their attack, it was good to see China Pallada go in for a try and how she's returned from her injury as well. So I wanted to give her a shout out, and she's also been here on Nijin Footy, so you'll be able to find that wherever you get your podcasts. Now, is there anything else to cover with before we shift over to rugby union?
Yes, there is. Roosters and the Broncos have officially made the finals, so they are locked in. Depending on what happens, so over the next couple of weeks, we'll determine where they sit in on the ladder and what will happen in finals footy, whether Roosters will remain on top and get that break, or whether there's the potential that they slightly drop down the ladder and end up playing another team. But as well as that, Shalom Sorsor has been handed a one-match ban following incident in the game where she used her bumpers illegally. So she will be out this weekend, which will be a tough loss to the Broncos.
All right, Shelley, so obviously Roosters and Broncos are locked in, first and second, or for the finals anyway. What other teams are sort of looking to get into the finals, into that top six?
Yeah, so at the moment, the Eels and Warriors are both on 6 points. So the Warriors have made a great comeback towards the back end of the season. So there is the potential at the moment for them, if they keep getting wins, to end up in the top six. Titans need to keep winning to stay in the top six. But the Knights is an interesting one. After that loss, they dropped to fifth on the ladder. So they'll need to get some more wins under their belt to remain in that top six as well. So it is quite close, like it has been over the last couple of years when it comes to finals footy. The draw doesn't go for a long period of time, so teams need to get as many wins as possible in such a short period of time.
Beautiful, exciting time of the year where we start to see teams, you know, racing for them final spots. It's the same thing happening over at the NRL as well. Now let's shift over to rugby union. What do you got for us?
Well, Manusina Samoa officially opened up in the competition for the Rugby World Cup versus Australia. Unfortunately, they lost to Australia 73-0. But I tell you what, it was a great game to watch. And for pretty much the whole entire game, I was sitting on the couch going, come on, come on, Samoa, come on, score a try here. But it was very unfortunate. For Samoa, they were very close to the try line just before half time, where the TMO actually called a dangerous contact. So the ball was kicked away, The TMO, in that time that they were getting the ball back for Manusina to play, the TMO called in and said dangerous contact had happened prior, so they lost the ball just in front of the line. And I think that really took away a lot of Manusina's momentum, and they were just defending a lot in that game. There was a lot of tries, particularly in that first part of the game, one after the other, just around the outsides of Manusina, that I think burnt a lot of energy out of them. But when they came out at halftime, they were able to minimise the amount of tries that Australia could score in that second half. And I think that really gives them some confidence going into the next couple of games to go, okay, we can actually keep teams to low scoring tries. And I think, you know, particularly Australia, we know that they're such a great team in terms of outside backs, in that particularly that middle dominance. Like, look at Eva Kapani and Pohiva, they're both really strong middles, but Manusina was able to really do well to combat them. So give them a lot of confidence going into the next couple of rounds.
Good to see the Wallaroos off to a good start. Can you share with us some of the try scorers from their team?
Yeah, so Adiana Talakai, she ended up scoring two tries in that game. She's a great Nijin star that we have in the Wallaroos squad. And along with her, Cecilia Smith, she's actually a born and bred Samoan herself. So for her, she talked a little bit before the game about being able to represent Australia, but also play her birth country. So that's a really special one, to be able to score a try in a game like that and, you know, be able to verse her sisters in the World Cup. But Eva Kapani as well, you know, not one to miss the try line as well.
How good.
How good.
And what about the Fijiana? How do they go to kick off their campaign?
Fijiana unfortunately came up against Canada, who is ranked number two in the world. They went down 65-7, but again, it was a great performance, very hearty effort from them. It did unfortunately go a bit downhill for Fiji when a player got a yellow card in that first half, and then in the second half of the game, they got a red card. So they were defending, you know, man down throughout most of the game, and unfortunately that just gasses you out as players. And in that second half, Canada were able to really dominate and score a lot of tries. One more thing, guys, I just wanted to mention as well that there were actually two suspensions that came out of the round one of the World Cup. Bulo from Fiji has been suspended for 3 matches. Now, she, I believe, may be able to get it down to 2 games. But in terms of the World Cup, there's only a limited number of games that each team plays before finals. So for Fiji, this will definitely be a loss. And as well, Melina Grace from Samoa has been a proposal of 3-match ban. So for both of those teams, they'll be down a player. But, you know, there's a lot of talent in that squad, and I think that they should be able to fill them. But it's very sad for those two players.
Thank you, and we appreciate you for always jumping on every Monday here on Nijin Footy.
Thanks so much, guys.
This season, get your footy fix live and ad-free.
Can you believe it, ladies and gentlemen? It's hammer time!
Every try.
He pinned the
tackle.
What a tackle!
We've got you covered.
That's not a pass. It's a party trick.
NRL. Each weekend.
Bing, bing, bing. Giant set bingo.
ABC Radio Australia. Your home of rugby league in the Pacific.
This is Nijin Footy.
Well, Will, we have, I know you and your family are Tongan royalty, but we've also got joining us today, Papua New Guinean royalty.
Absolutely.
He's played over 250 rugby league professional games, including the Penrith Panthers, Cronulla Sharks, the greatest club in the world, Wakefield Trinity, Leeds and Catalans. And he's also played in 3 World Cups for the Kumuls and now the current coach for the PNG Hunters. I want to introduce everyone and to all our listeners, we have the one and only Paul Aiton. Paulie, thank you for joining us, brother.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for having me on.
I'll start off with your background, your culture. You know, whereabouts in Papua New Guinea are you from?
Yep, I'm from the Western Highland province. I'm actually mixed. My father's Australian, white, blue-eyed, and my mum's full Papua New Guinean. So he's working over here. I think he came in, he was 18, and he's stayed here 20-plus years. So I was born in the Western Highlands, a place called Mount Harding.
And how long did you live there before moving to Caboolture?
Six. I was 5 turning 6. Went straight from village life to grade one. So it was quite interesting. Didn't really reflect on it until many years later, but yeah, it was an interesting move.
When you did get that time to reflect on that move and the difference in culture, what things did you recognise?
I never really reflected. I just went down and just sort of got on with it. It wasn't until after that I started to identify, I've got Papua New Guinean heritage, I'm from there, because there wasn't many then there at the time. Now they're everywhere in Brizzy, which is good. But at the time I had an auntie that, you know, we call everyone auntie and uncle, but had one that I knew. I didn't really know anyone else. So I didn't really have that growing up. I remembered, had memories from there. So it wasn't until I got a bit older that, you know, I played for the Kumuls that really, I felt really comfortable. I felt like I belonged somewhere. And that was probably when I started to really notice that difference. Probably when I was down in Penrith, yeah. Still, I didn't really figure it out until I played for the Kumuls that I Well, oh yeah, these guys, yeah, they sound like my mum, you know, things like that. Sounds odd now when I think about it, but I wasn't raised like, oh, you are this way, and you know, we just got on with it.
Yeah, yeah. So you move over here when you're about 5, 6, and then when did you go back to Papua New Guinea? What was that like?
Got some photos actually from back then when I went back. It was quite wild actually. It was a big thing, you know. I didn't realise. It was kind of a big thing when I went back. I'd see so many relatives and distant relatives and all the different villages come together. It was quite a humbling experience. I appreciated them doing it, but I didn't really feel very comfortable being treated that way. You know, it was overwhelming, you know, overwhelming love and support, and made it felt really uncomfortable for me. I'd rather just go and, you know, just keep on the down low sort of thing. But in another way, it was really good. It was felt like I was loved and felt part of the community. But I really enjoyed it.
Is that the photo? And I remember I seen it where they had a parade and they had you carry. They were carrying you on their shoulders. Had you raised on a chair, and he was wearing like all the indigenous Papua New Guinea kit.
Yeah, right.
And he was going through the streets.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah. That was the part I meant. It was very overwhelming. appreciated it.
Was that trip when you returned, was that for like a family trip or were you playing for the Kumuls?
No, it was just a family trip.
Well, it's either royalty or you're just a man, Paul. So yeah. I'm sure that's why they did it. And speaking of the Kumuls, you played for the PNG Kumuls on a number of occasions and you captained the team as well. What would you say was your proudest moment?
Just wearing the jersey. I think the first time I was really extremely proud. And the proudest moments would probably be singing the anthem, because the anthem itself is, you listen to it, it's a very humble anthem. And I think it really reflects the people. The words in it's about faith, forefathers, family, the earth, like that, where you stand. It's a really, really, really nice anthem. And I think that's probably the most proudest moment when I'm able to sing it.
Was it a bit of a culture shock when you, an NRL player, in that high-performance environment, and then going to represent the PNG Kumuls back then? You obviously, they don't have the facilities that they do have now. You know, what was that experience like?
Yeah, it was definitely, even now, I think the Kumuls boys now you get the best. Back then, I think I was given $5 a day from the first game. I think I was even getting $500 a day. Didn't matter. That's just, you know, it's like an allowance. Yeah, we used to, because we didn't have a field. And that was probably the best memories, because I was lucky enough to play in 2017 where we had this, an international stadium, and it's like next level NRL standard. But back then, there wasn't that. So you'd have to get dressed in a hotel and then drive in. And because back then, you could jump the fence. So everyone came because they knew that there's a good chance that they'd be able to get in the field. But now you can't. So you're 3 or 4 blocks out of the game. You couldn't get in because there was just swarms of people. I'd be bashing on the bus. And man, I'd just get goosebumps because it was the best feeling, because it was just excitement. And it wasn't so much that they wanted to hurt. It was just, you know, if people just wanted to touch you and just, you know, wish you well and stuff like that. And banging the bus. And I always used to giggle because I thought, I wonder what the Aussies would feel. You know, because we know they're like, the Aussies would be thinking, I don't know what they're thinking, but yeah, because everyone's cheering Beetle Nut and all that, so they'd be pretty worried. But at the end of the day, they just wanted to see their heroes and wanted to touch them on the shoulder, or, you know, want a boot or, you know, something for them. And so you get there, so you were dressed at the hotel. But I knew, you know, we didn't probably have the skill, you know, at that high level, or the you know, things were a little bit different. We didn't have all the correct gear and things, but I knew that we'd always play out above and beyond what we were capable of. Even though the scores were heavily one-sided, we just enjoyed the camp, you know, because everyone was humble. That's probably the thing I like the most. Some Aussie camps, sometimes they don't have that. They don't have that being humble and just being appreciated being there and appreciated just being part of a team. And so, no, I knew it when I went there, like, everyone was so lucky to be there, you know. That was probably the best thing.
I remember in 2009 when we played Pacific Champs, And then the final ended up being us versus Hughes, Cook Islands versus Papua New Guinea. Now, when he says get ready at the hotel, so he would get ready, catch the bus in, and then you'd have the game. No word of a lie, as we're coming out, you know, you still got kids chasing after the bus.
Yeah.
By the time we get back to the hotel, every player and every person in that bus were in their undies because we're throwing our boots, throwing our training gear, jerseys, everything out the window just to give to all the kids that were chasing us. And
so do you remember going in?
Yeah, it was packed. It was two. I don't even think we made it to the dressing sheds.
Yeah, well, I played an NRL game over there, and you know, we were just NRL, so I can't imagine what the Kummels would be like for those kids watching them play. And so that must be a memorable experience. And shifting gears a little bit, Paul, you've obviously gone from playing into coaching. How has the transition from that been for you, and what's the most rewarding part?
Oh, massive. Yeah, because I didn't want to coach.
Really?
I didn't want to coach. Didn't want anything to do with it. I didn't think I'd be one of those players that found it hard to move on, but I was one of those players, and I found it extremely hard. I got a job and everything. I was working up in the mines, and I just felt like I wanted to give back. I wanted to give back somehow back to TMD because of that language barrier, and I thought, man, I reckon I could probably help some of these players. So that was how I started. I reached out to a couple of Dem Cup teams, which is the national competition over here.
Yeah.
Reached out to a couple of teams, and you know, I think even flew up here as well to see, like, where can I help some of these teams out? And that was all in talks. And at that time, COVID hit, and then I looked for an assistant with the Hunters. I thought, oh, you know, late night on the Instagram, shot a message. And then from there, the coach at the time, Matt Church, reached out to me, and yeah, the rest is history. But I've grown a lot, like more than, yeah, massively. Like, there's so much growth has happened since I took the role from where I was to now. It's that day and night.
What's the most challenging part of coaching a team like the PNG Hunters?
External factors.
Yeah.
I haven't been in a team that has so much, because culturally, when there's a death, you know, you normally grieve for a week, nearly once a week there's somebody, you know, I haven't noticed that much ever. You don't realise, but there's so much death. Yeah, it affects that player and then us as well. Mm. Obviously, performance, but we just feel sorry. So I find that external factors, death being one of them, sickness, malaria, dengue fever, almost weekly occurrence where one of our skiff actually played with dengue fever.
Wow.
It's pretty bad, like worse than malaria. I've never had it, but boys have it all the time. So they told me about it. And malaria kills, you know, it's bad. You know, they'll just go get a needle and it's bad. Yeah, I think external, family, and then mindset as well, which is, I guess, kind of external, you know, the way you brought up in a professional environment. I think that's the biggest thing. Your boy's willingness is always there. That's not a problem. Speed and strength is not, that's not, you know, it's not the issues.
Yeah.
Mm. Nor the external, I reckon, yeah.
Yeah, well, strength is definitely not an issue. I know being in opposition, no one wants to play the Kummels because of how physical the players are. And PNG is actually getting an NRL team, obviously.
Yeah,
as you know. How excited are you for that?
Oh, I'm excited. I'm really, really excited. I think it's a really good thing. You know, I know there's some publicity about not a good thing, but I think it's a terrific thing. And I think, you know, rugby league's not here to solve hospital problems and anything like that. But I think one thing that we can do is upskill a lot of, obviously, players.
Absolutely.
And I've already seen it. Maybe because I'm on the ground and I've been here for a few years, I've seen the movement on the ground. It's employed so many people already.
Mm.
And it's going to employ more. It's upskilling a lot of coaches, trainers, players are getting the benefits of it. It's a really good thing. I think long-term, it's on the trajectory it is now, which is up. It's going to be massive for the game as well.
Yeah, definitely.
For the game as well.
Before I get to, we'll speak about some of the challenges that might come around creating, you know, this NRL team. But one thing that always comes to mind was a couple of years ago, I was over there for the Pack Champs and we got to cross paths and you're like, oh, you know, let me come in, I'll come pick you up and I'll take you out. But there's always this reputation that people may have about PNG and, you know, that it being unsafe. But the way that you spoke about some of those areas that you wanted to take me to, you know, being a safe place and being beautiful, can you share to our listeners about, you know, what that looks like and, you know, some of those, that reputational rumours, you know, what does the good side look like?
Definitely, I'd love to. Well, actually, in front of me is my wife. I married a French girl from the south of France, and we moved to Australia. And to come here wasn't so easy because her parents, full French, just looked on the internet. and which is normal, right? It's completely normal. It wasn't an easy decision for her to make to move here. But since she's moved here, she gets around, she drives by herself. I've got two small children. Plus a three-year-old girl who moved here. When we moved here, she was one. My son's six, going to grade one. So I'm living that, you know, I'm living that life where we had to, you know, go to hospital for the first time. And my wife's been in hospital now. She's pregnant again.
Congrats.
So we're going through all this, mate. Yeah, thank you. So I know there's going to be a lot of stigma around it, but there are dangerous places, like everywhere. But she drives by herself. She picks up my kids. My son goes to soccer in the afternoons. We've got tennis training, swimming club. My daughter goes to a kindergarten since one. My son goes to another school, grade one. He picks them up, drops them off. I know people are always thinking that, and which is understandable. I completely agree. But I think once you're here, you start to create your own little communities and you meet people, and you know, there are bad things, but there are lovely people here.
Yeah.
You know, we're caring people. There are some bad eggs, like anywhere, but there are good spots and there's beautiful places. I think my wife's done more, seen probably more of this area than I have. Her parents came. Parents came straight from south of France, came for a couple of weeks and stayed, I think, 6 weeks. They loved it.
Wow.
They loved it. I know once people are here and they get to get out and see a little bit of the place.
Yeah.
Then you go with somebody. There was somebody to show you where to go and things like that. It's a good place.
Yeah, beautiful. We spoke about some of the challenges that the Hunters have. Now, when you look at the NRL team to be introduced from PNG, yeah, what do you think is the biggest hurdle?
Well, I think, like we just spoke about, maybe just breaking that stigma a little bit so we can attract players, because we're going to have to. So we're going to have to attract players. So that'll be one. So they're going to have to start, you know, building where the players are going to live. And even now, as it is, even if they don't have that, most places, they're their own little compound anyway. But I think once players get here and the word gets around what it's like here, I think they're going to have a lot of people wanting to come. Mm-hmm. You know, I really believe that. I think once you're here and you see, oh, it's not too bad, more players will want to come here and be a part of it. They might not want to leave, you know. So, I mean, it mightn't be for everyone, but, yeah, that's what I think on that front. I'm hoping that I've got the NRL bids going, the PGRSL, they do a really good thing with all the juniors, and it's on an upward trajectory. They've got a women's league now. They've got a juniors system. It's really good. It's on, and I just hope it keeps going that way. And if it keeps going that way, I think we'll export players. You know, I really believe that. So players at first, yeah, we might have to attract, but later on down the line, I think we're going to have a lot of players here.
Man, if there's one nursery that has some
everyone
great
plays footy.
Rugby league
everyone.
Players, it's
everyone definitely coaches.
Definitely Papua New Guinea, and I think having that, you know, having their own team and then have that, it'll have that flow and effect all the way down to grassroots and not just in Port Moresby, in the Highlands, and then you just capture all of them and funnel them through the PNG NRL team, and then also to the rest of the other clubs. You're right, you'll end up exporting players.
It'd be good for footy.
Yeah, and I was going to say, Paul, like with what you're saying, I think you need to be part of the recruitment team, because what you shared, you know, for an outsider is pleasing to hear, because I think that is a real stigma for NRL players and their families, that, you know, PNG is a dangerous place, so to speak. But to hear, you know, of your wife traveling, your kids, just sounds like normal, right?
Yeah.
Your kids are in sports and things of that nature, and so and like anywhere in the world, there's good and bad places everywhere.
Yeah, I'd like the place to come have a look. You know, so come have a look, and definitely, like my wife's parents didn't want her to come.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, they didn't want her to come at all. Like, she nearly didn't come, but she came. She followed me, and now they wanted to, they're coming again.
Yeah, how good.
And but once you're here and have a look around and.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We've seen that they're running a competition to name the team, and we've come up with a couple of our own here on Nation Footy. My one was the PNG Boulders. You know, you got those big boulder shoulders.
Yeah.
There's another one, PNG Angels, you know, named after
the Fuzzy Wuzzy
Angels.
I heard that one.
And have you got any of your own?
No, I like the Hunters. I like the Hunters. Maybe because I'm coaching you, but I like the Hunters. Somebody said the Chiefs. I mean, I'm in my mouth.
But would you like to coach the NRL team down the track? Is that sort of some aspirations you have, Paul?
Not really. I definitely love to help. Yeah. I've grown a lot, but I got a lot more to go. So it's not on. Just want to be good at what I'm doing and just keep learning at the moment. So I don't really have any aspirations now. I love to help. I mean, for me, I signed up because I really took the role because it was described to me as a pathway, and that's a pathway of getting our players out. And now being here and talking to all the players, and every one of them wants to play for the Kumuls and they want to get out. You know, they want to go and for a new opportunity and make their lives better and their family. And I just want to help them do that. That's basically how I see my role, and I just want to do that. I just want to help the next one get up, give them as much as I know, and then get them out of here and so they can get their life better. So that's how I see my role.
Absolutely love your work, brother, and just want to say a big thank you for jumping on. I know you're a busy man, reporting live from Papua New Guinea, but we appreciate you and much love from our Nesian Footy team.
Thank you to the team, Nesian Footy, and thanks to Will and Wutek. Thank you very much,
boys. You're the man, brother.
Thanks, Paul.
Hey, it's Lachie Lamb, and I'm listening to Nesian Footy.
Give me three answers for this one.
Vengeance.
Let's talk about this.
Vengeance is on the cards.
Every time Sam and Will are here on Give Me Three, Will's question is, give me three try scorers from this game that have Pacific background. And then Sammy somehow knows all three of those players. But if you're new to our show, this is Give Me Three, where we play our game of categories. There's 3 points up for grabs each week, and it might be about footy, it might not be, but the loser at the end of the year has to shout the other hosts and their partner a spa day, dinner, the works. The scores are 27 to me, 28 to Sam, and because I've got you on the show, I know that you asked Sammy the questions for me last week. I'll ask you the question again. So, Will Hopowate, you have played a number of NRL games, professional rugby league games. You've had a lot of teammates, correct?
Yes, that would be correct.
So, out of all your teammates, I want you to give me the three Pacifica players that you've played the most games with.
Oh, I'm going to look like a bad teammate here.
Yes, you are.
All right. Well, it's got to be someone at the Bulldogs because I was there the longest. Raymond Faitala Mariner.
Good. That's one.
Ah.
You played 61 games.
Wow.
With Raymond. Do you want to know how much you won and lost?
No. No, thank you.
You guys won 19 games together and lost 42.
That's all Ray's fault. Hey, listening, Ray? Oh, Ray, that's your fault, mate.
All right, that's one.
All right, Ray.
That was your second most.
Second most. Wow, okay. Next one, I'd have a guess, would be Sammy Cass.
Ooh, no.
No.
Sammy Cass was further down.
Okay.
You played 35 games with Sammy.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Stick to the Bulldogs theme.
Okay.
That's
your clue?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say...
And...
Renoff.
Oh, Renoff is currently playing at Wakefield Trinity as well, but no... Unfortunately, he wasn't in your top three.
Sorry, Sam.
It was Danny Folalo.
Oh, Danny.
Yes,
oh,
63 okay. games you played really? With Danny. Wow. And the other one is a Cook Islander. Can you guess? He's tall and he's got red hair.
A cookie tall red hair.
You've played 47 games with him and his name is... Dylan Napa.
Oh, Naps. Oh,
Come on, brother.
Sorry, Naps.
All right, well, that's it for Monday. I'll catch you on Friday. But if you are listening, tell your footy-loving friends about Nesian Footy. Find it wherever you get your podcast or on the ABC Pacific website. Ka kite. Let's go Nesian Footy Fridays. A few days, Sam. Will.
Thank you, T.
I'm about to call you Sam.
This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.
multiple centuries, Pacific Islanders have been sharing stories that connect us across the region. Stories from the Pacific is a weekly program that continues that tradition, bringing you deep and personal stories from a diverse range of people. Athletes, farmers, artists, teachers, activists, entrepreneurs, all united by their Pacific heritage and incredible journeys.
Listen to Stories from the Pacific on your favorite podcast app.